Hello, 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 and welcome to the Vevid Studio, home of Oris Queer Media. And what an exciting day we have lined up today. This is one of our musical episodes, which we don't have that very often, actually.
No, exactly.
So I'm one of your hosts today. My name is Luke Smith, and we also have...
I'm Angus Wright.
But yes, the exciting thing about today's show is that you'll actually be performing some of your songs live for us here in the studio.
Yeah.
And we are going to be talking about country music. And we realize this isn't a country station, so please forgive us for an hour. But what we're going to be talking about is the intersection of country and the gay, bi, lesbian, trans community, and how that all comes together. I'm sure folks know that Steve Grand was famously touted as the first openly gay country singer. What was that, about a couple of months ago, maybe? About a year or two, maybe?
Yeah, I think he's been on the scene for about a year.
Yeah, that was his song All American Boy came out, and he was broadly touted as the first country singer. Anyway, what we're going to do is play a song from 1973 by Lavender Country. Now, Lavender Country really, truly is one of the oldest gay country songs there is, and definitely predates Steve Grand. So this is Can't Shake the Stranger Out of You. I knew I'd get the name eventually. And we'll be back just after this on the Velvet Studio. Hello and welcome back to the Velvet Studio, home of Ottawa's Queer Media. My name is Luke Smith, as we mentioned just a few minutes ago, and we're also joined by Angus. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
And the two folks in our other studio there, Drake and Jonathan, how are you?
We're good.
How are you guys?
Excellent. Sorry, I didn't have my headphones on then. The whole system's working fine, but don't have my headphones on. Can't hear a thing. These things happen.
And there is no smoke in the studio, so we're okay.
It's falling apart.
Excellent. Now, that was that's an old school country song that was there. Are you familiar with Lavender Country?
Yeah. Yeah, that was like one of the first like things to come out of the LGBT community. as far as country music goes, yeah. So it was brought to my attention, actually, after, you know, I professionally launched my career 5 years ago. Because a lot of stuff from the U.S., we'd never bled over the border, so we didn't really know. But there's been a lot of people that have been before, you know. If you want to talk about artists, I mean, there's Mark Weigel in the U.S. and Patrick Massey in out west here in Canada, and myself. So there's been a long history of kind of overlooked, shall we say, conveniently overlooked maybe. But artists that are incredible, that, you know, that really paved the way for people like me.
Excellent. Excellent. Now, I know that, you know, it, and we'll talk about the ability of being able to be out in the country scene when we discuss Shelley Wright in just a few moments. But you were talking before we came into the studio about when you did come out as a gay country act in, was it 2014, 2015?
I just want to say that Jonathan doesn't want to have any part of this because he's straight.
Oh.
Yeah.
No,
we forgive him.
Jonathan came out with me. Sorry, Luke. Keep going. What were you saying?
I can't even remember anymore.
When did you come out as gay in terms of linking to your country music? Because you performed well before becoming Drake Jensen.
Yeah, like I was an East Coast musician for years because I'm from Cape Breton, Nova Scotia, so is Jonathan. But yeah, I professionally sent a press release to Canadian radio about a year after I had recorded the first album in Nashville.
So 2012?
It was 2012, yeah, something like that. So we sent this press release to radio and, you know, we got knocked off a playlist after I did it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there was stations that were playing us that wouldn't play us anymore.
Oh, wow. So here in Canada or in the
Canada,
States?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. It exists here. The country music is a very different genre. And right now we, you know, people like myself and Patrick Massey have toughed it out and have sacrificed many things to be ourselves. One of them being that the notoriety level is not there because people just want to sweep it under the carpet. It still exists.
Oh, back into the closet.
Yeah, yeah. So
dude.
I ain't going there.
It's just for clothes.
There's no
fabulous
closet that could contain
denim and leather clothes. That's
oh, you've been to his closet, have you?
My closet?
Yeah. It's full of denim and leather, isn't it?
Oh my gosh. Why don't we kick it off? And are you willing to play for us On My Way to Finding You? Do you want to tell us a bit about that song and the inspiration for it?
The song was given to me by a producer in Nashville, and I just loved the fact that it was a journey song. And I had no idea that it would become such a pillar for people in the gay community like it has. It was featured on Toll Road's blog and received 40 some odd thousand views that day. It became a beacon of some sorts to oppressed gay people, because there's a lot of them in the U.S. that are older, that have been from my generation, because I'm 40, proudly going on 46 years old. And they lived in the closet much worse than I did in Cape Breton, Nova Scotia, and it became quite a significant song. And then we produced the video, which showed my husband and I together embracing, and that kind of took off and made radio, and even made radio shows in Knoxville, Tennessee, like they were talking about it. So it was quite a notable tune. I just loved it because it was a great love song. And then we dedicated it to the Ottawa team that commits suicide so sadly, Jamie Hoogley.
We'll touch on that probably after the song and bring that into a local conversation.
Yep. Let's go, Jay.
All right, let's do this thing.
I remember running out the screen door, racing down the driveway on my bike, past the corn out in the fields and the blackbirds on the wires, with the dirt roads flying high beneath my stingray tires, down to the river on a summer afternoon. Just a farm boy running wild on my way to finding you. down the hallways of my learning with my school friends, and on the playing fields where we all fought so hard. And then after graduation, in the real world and the bars, past the faces I was searching to feel the hunger in my heart, and on to the bottom of every dead end road that I came to. I was a man on a mission, on my way to finding you. Now I'm not sure what I did so right to find someone who loves me like you do. As if all of my wandering days was a journey I was meant to make it through. On my way to finding you. On my way to finding you. And now I'm not sure what I did so right to find someone who loves me like you do. As if all of my wandering days was a journey I was meant to make it through. On my way to finding you. 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 On my way to finding you.
Wow.
Yeah, well done.
That was really incredible, and like the emotion in that song is truly palpable. Just before you sang, you mentioned that the song had been dedicated to, of course, the loss of Jamie Hubley. Something that this radio show also shares with that song is an inspiration to really provide something as a resource to the gay community. And do you find that your work has been a resource?
Yeah, I mean, I started my career kind of with, I just wanted to do it, right? Because it was a dream of mine. And I thought, maybe I'm too old now, but I did it anyway. And I believe that in our lives that we're guided to things. And I think that I was on my own path, and I had no idea how many people that we would affect.
Mm-hmm.
After On My Way to Finding You was released, it kind of got chopped at radio because I came out and said, well, I'm gay and here's my country music video and this is me and my husband, and it was kind of frowned upon by the professional industry, but it was embraced by the gay community, and we received so many emails. Like, I literally received emails from people that were going to commit suicide that had said that I decided to stay around a little bit longer because I seen this video and there's hope.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what, that's really profound when that starts to happen to you. We've spent a tremendous amount of money and time on developing the music. You know, Jonathan and I, my husband manages me, and we have a team of people that work with us, and it's been a real labor of love because there's no money in the music industry. You know, it doesn't come back unless you're on a big label, and it's very difficult to do that these days. So it's been wonderful to be able to have that impact on people because it's made every step of the journey absolutely worthwhile.
Now, you'd mentioned earlier that you went down to Nashville and recorded there. I think you said your first album was from Nashville, mm-hmm. or done in Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you mentioned as well that you did some songwriting in Alabama.
Yeah.
But what I'm interested in is how did your experience growing up in the East Coast, like the Canadian influence, how did that shape your music?
Musically, I think I came... Cape Breton was very Celtic. you know. So Jonathan and I actually played in, we were in oppositional rock bands, you know, because I was a, I was a rock singer for years with, you know, the big puffy hair and the frosted platinum blonde mullet. And Jonathan,
a sight to be seen.
Yeah, I was all about the you know, look at me, I'm a rock star. And Jonathan was all about, he was the completely contrary to what I was. He was all about the music, because Jonathan's an incredibly talented musician. So we were very opposing forces, and it's interesting that we met here back in Ottawa, and we started to create, you know, what is the sound that is Drake Jensen, right? Jonathan has been instrumental in creating that sound, and Jonathan's from the East Coast also. And just very soon, we're going back to the East Coast. We're going to record in one of the largest recording studios in Nova Scotia and go back to our roots and bring a brand new tune there for radio back. And we're going to record it there and release it in August. So we're going to take another stab at radio. So let's see what's going to happen. Because the fact that I'm gay seems to be coming a part of who I am and not exactly what my music is. Because my music is for everybody.
So you have a pretty big bear following as far as your music goes. How have they taken to Jonathan?
Well, they like Jonathan.
And how has Jonathan taken to them?
Jonathan likes it. He likes the attention.
He's all good with it.
I'm not going to say I haven't used Jonathan.
I've disappointed a couple of fellas along the way, but
A couple of hearts.
There was actually one at a urinal in Sugar Bear. We played a gig at Sugar Bear in Montreal. And Jonathan was at the urinal, and the urinals were open, and one guy, you know, this guy was a doctor. I mean, this guy was a doctor. He had lots of money. He was from the Hamptons, too. Yeah. And if Jonathan, if you had been single, this would have been the perfect opportunity.
He could have been a sugar daddy for Jonathan.
He, you know,
paid for a record.
He was shining on Jonathan at the urinal.
That's what my wife said. It's like, hey, you could have taken one for the team. That's right. You know, hey, he was wealthy.
There's a pension plan in this, Jonathan. I'm trying to, you know. But no, you know, that whole thing with the bear community has been wonderful. That's seemingly the demographic that I fit into. And, you know, we were talking about Steve Grant, and Steve has his fans, and that's wonderful. They're younger. Mm-hmm. They're a different generation. The generation that I, you know, market my music to, we're older guys. You know, we're the ones that have been in the closet and know what it's like to have to hide yourself. And then, you know, you go through all the shame issues. And so we've been the ones that have paved that road. So my fans are very, very loyal. And I think they'll be around for a very long time. So I think that the people that listen to my music are vital to me.
Mm-hmm.
And they're fans of older country, too, is the other thing, is that you know, we're not doing sort of the neo-country Florida, Georgia line type stuff.
No, except for the new song. We're going to sell out for the new song. We want some attention.
Now, you'd mentioned that you had some trouble getting into the radio industry.
Yeah.
We're going to cut to a quick song by Shirley Wright, because I think this really demonstrates, at least in the States, struggling against what was at least then a homophobic industry. We'll be back just after this on the Velvet Studio.
Thank you.
Hello and welcome back to the Velvet Studio. You know, I can count on all my fingers and toes how many times I've forgotten where I am and what I'm doing. And this was one of those occasions. I have the memory of a goldfish. So yes, that was Shelley Wright, and I actually got told, and we'll get to Shelley Wright in just a few minutes, but I got told that we should have gone with Melissa Etheridge instead of Shelley Wright. And what are your thoughts on that, Drake?
Well, Melissa Etheridge was you know, kind of pop rock, and Melissa Etheridge is amazing. Like, she's probably one of the best LGBT artists that I've heard. But Shelley Wright was country, and she was living in that Nashville scene that, you know, it was straight, it was white, it was, you know, very, very conservative, and mm-hmm. it still is that way, you know. So I think that your choice of Shelley Wright was the correct choice.
I'm just gonna take that to the bank.
Yeah.
Now, speaking of Shelley Wright, she famously was noted for essentially being shunned out of the scene, and I know that you actually have read her biography, I think it is.
Yeah, she had a book, and she, excuse me one second. She wrote this book, and it was pretty profound, and to be honest, you know, Shelley and I had not had any contact, and but I will say that her book convinced me and showed me what I shouldn't do with my life.
Mm.
Because there was a lot of, you know, deception and lies and misery and unhappiness and at the end, like, utter grief that brought her to shove a gun in her mouth.
Oh, my gosh.
That was the end of the book. She had a gun in her mouth.
Well, I know that Shelley Wright's doing much better now, has two children, is happily married, and is in a much, much better place. Just as an FYI, if you are in distress, please call the Ottawa Distress Centre or your local helpline. What do you think about the challenges that still remain in being openly gay in the country industry? And we'll touch on the Americans, because I think the Americans are a bit of a almost a pariah in that sense. But how does that compare to the being openly gay in the Canadian country industry?
Well, there's only two of us that are openly gay, Patrick Massey and I, and I don't know. I don't really belong to the music industry. I'm an artist, and I think that my experience has been of my own. I've been played on radio, and we've been awarded here in Canada in Montreal for our work with homophobia, and, you know, it's been wonderful. But I can't really comment on the music industry because, you know, I've had many things that were negative happened to me in the music industry because of the fact that I came out, you know, that I don't really talk about it anymore because it's really not worthy. Mm. But, you know, so I just kind of experience it. I do my music for me and the people who listen to it, you know, and I think you'll find the right audience that way.
Well, and I think that as well, when you look at the political climate right now in the U.S. and you're seeing just how far even the LGBTQ community needs to come, you know, as far as respect and recognition. I think that sometimes when we're in Canada, we kind of live in a bubble that we think everybody doesn't have the same struggle that we have. And so I think it kind of gets reflected in the industry a little bit as well, just in terms of what's considered marketable and what's not marketable, right?
Yeah, and I think with social media and everything, you can create your own space. Like, you have to work at it, you know, because that's what we've done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and create a following of yourself. You're responsible for it, you know. You're kind of in control of your own career.
We wanted to ask you about the song Scars. Now, I think we've actually played that on one of our previous episodes. We also played the duet that you did with Bellamy.
Will and Bella.
Yeah, which was very entertaining. Mm-hmm. Stand By Your Man.
Yeah, you should have been there.
Jeez, I can't even imagine. I bet that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was interesting.
So what was the inspiration behind the track Scars?
I had told a songwriter in Toronto, Don Graham, about my experience in school and what had happened to me with bullying. And because I left school in grade 8 and never went back until I was like 43 years old. And so he took the experience, and him and Zita Da Silva, both again from Toronto, wrote the song Scars and then gave it to me and said, "Here, it's yours," you know. So we recorded the demo for it, and it was obvious that we had to do it, and it became one of those other kind of iconic songs that I've done that talks about the reality of what people face when they're bullied.
It comes close to home. That's been your experience in down home, isn't it?
Well, yeah, this is my song.
Yeah, that's
why it was a song that I'd done for me. It was a cathartic. It was me vomiting all of my terrible negative energy and what had happened to me when I was young. Because I lived that experience, and back then it wasn't bullying. You just, you know, you put up with it. You know, it wasn't something that was, there was no education, there was no awareness of it, you know, and there was a lot of things that happened that were grave, really, to me when I was very young, and which shaped who I was, that I'm very grateful for today. So, because it's been able to make me empathetic and sympathetic to other people's stories and then be able to translate it into the music and create something like Scars. The video was probably the most profound thing I've ever done. It's probably the most... the project that I'm most proud of that we've done visually is Scars, because it's just so terrible. The video is terrible,
You know, in an emotional way. Not,
it's visually terrible. Yeah. It's very emotionally disturbing. A lot of my fans didn't get it.
It's a dark video for
sure. Excuse me, I just need a drink of water. They said that they didn't get it. They didn't get why I look so scary. But when people said they didn't get it, I knew that they'd never experienced anything like being bullied. Because the word bully has become very pedestrian, but the actual act of being bullied and the emotional trauma of being bullied, you don't really understand until you've been in that situation. It totally changes your life. It changes everything that you are, you know. So that's why I tend to be quite serious about things like that, you know. So I wanted to make a video that, whether people liked it or not, didn't really matter. I wanted to make a shock value video, and I think with that video, Justin Reich and Blake Fawcett were the guys who did that in North Carolina. We'd done it in the States, and we did just, you know, they did a tremendous job of conveying how I felt at the moment.
I think it definitely stands as a very powerful piece, and one that we know that we've done the topic of bullying and high school bullying here at the show a couple of times, and it definitely speaks volumes to that. Would you be willing to share the song with us now?
Sure, yeah. Excellent.
Crying softly, hoping nobody will hear. She dries her eyes and tries stand up tall. She smiles bravely, trying hard to hide her fear. But her smile's fooling nobody at all. She needs someone to catch her when she falls. It started slowly with an unkind word or two. It was sad to see how ugly it had grown. She just accepted it, cause there was nothing that she could do. She was living with her pain all alone. And she prayed to the Lord to take her home. Sticks and stones will break her bones, but broken bones will heal. Deep within, beneath her skin, there's a pain that she conceals. And all her shame and anger, she keeps under lock and key. 'Cause the words they use when they abuse leave scars that you can't see. He looked up slowly at the clock upon the wall. Sees it's only minutes now till 3. He knows that they'll be waiting for him by the study hall, and he'll end up begging down upon his knees. And he's praying, won't someone help him, please? He was smaller than the others, and that made him an easy mark. The names that called him cut him to the bone. Couldn't see the ending, they had torn his world apart. He was living with his pain all alone, and he prayed to the Lord to take him home. Sticks and stones will break his bones, but broken bones will heal. And deep within, beneath his skin, there's a pain that he conceals. And all his shame and anger he keeps under lock and key. Words they use when they abuse leave scars that you can't see. The words they use when they abuse leave scars that you can't see.
Oh my gosh, I'm going to need a second from that song there. That was truly quite powerful. Just another really, truly incredible song that has a lot of deep meaning. Just for the sake of our audience, you do have a lot of other more upbeat friends, you know. happy-go-lucky.
Oh, dark and depressing. I've been known to be bad for that. Jonathan's been the one that's always been giving me a kick. He's like, you know, you got to do something more upbeat. The new song that we're cutting and putting in the radio is a very upbeat, and I was at a very different place when I started. You got to remember, mm-hmm. when I started, I was not feeling very well about myself. I was insecure. I wasn't confident. It was a struggle for me the first 3 years of my career. It was a real growing phase for me, and I needed to get rid of all of that dark stuff before I could move on to the really bright stuff. And yes, we have. In the last album, there was a lot of bright stuff on Retro because it was a cover album. But the newer stuff that you're going to see come from us, I think that's probably going to be very uplifting, and because I feel new. Well, I feel I've been able to let it go.
And you, speaking of that, you have a trip coming up, is that right?
Yeah, we're going back to, like I said, to Cape Breton Island. We're going to cut the new single at Sound Park Studios in Cape Breton Island with a very notable producer and engineer. Jonathan and Jamie Folds are going to co-produce the new single. And he's, you know, a very notable person as far as production and engineering goes. And he owns the studio where we'll be actually recording. And then we're also going to be performing back in my hometown of Glace Bay, Nova Scotia, at the Savoy Theater. And it's going to be an up-close, kind of like this. We're going to have a keyboard player. Doug Chase is going to join us on keyboards. Doug is a great keyboard player from Kitchener who's been in our band for years. So we're all going to drive on down to Cape Breton and give them kind of like a Cape Breton kitchen party show. So we're going to make them laugh and cry, and we'll depress them, and then we'll uplift them. And, you know.
Yeah, well, and in a way, you'll be introducing them to Drake Jensen, because it sounds like the last time you were there, you maybe had a big blonde mullet and some tight pants and some rocking.
Yeah, exactly.
And now they'll be sort of presented with this big daddy bear of sorts. Speaking of which, we were speaking of Steve Grand earlier. We have a little bit of a clip of Steve on YouTube claiming to be the gay daddy. Let's take a listen.
Oh, let me fix that. I faded it in, but did they turn it on? No, I didn't.
That's what old Steve has learned. I've had my ball and chain at one point, too, back in my day. And as YouTube's gay dad, I got to make sure I'm not sending your kids out there in the world unprepared to deal with life's curveball.
As the gay dad on YouTube, I think he's all of 12 years old, though. What do you think of that, Drake?
You know, I like Steve Grand. I like his music, and I think he's got a great positive message for people. And he's in a different demographic than me. But all I've got, you know, Steve, you shouldn't age yourself. It's really tough when you get to this point. You start getting gray hair and you're creaky in the morning. It's not all it's cracked up to be. It's not really sexy. But, you know, I'm not going to claim myself to be anything. I think my fans all know who I am, and I know who I am. So,
do you think that's playing into gay stereotypes a little, like the stereotype of the gay dad? And
Well, of course, because I'm a complete stereotype. Everything about me is stereotypical. I am a stereotypical 45-year-old gay man. I'm a gay bear. I'm the complete stereotype. I fit that role. I don't mind. I think labels, people need labels. We need to organize things in our lives, and people need to have a label to put things in certain places and to be able to deal with them. And I didn't like the labels at first. I'm like, don't label me, I'm an artist. I was getting, all Prince, when Prince went and he went and did that sign and took his name away, nobody knew how to spell his name anymore because they couldn't do the artwork. Well, I was kind of getting like that. And I'm like, no, Drake, you're doing the wrong thing, right? Because people need to identify with you. So we'll allow them to identify by calling you a bear. It's not an insult to me. Or if they call me daddy, I mean, I am a daddy. I'm 46 years old. I've got a face full of gray hair. And that's just the kind of person I am. I like to take care of people, and I'm not talking in the gay sexual way. That's not what I'm talking about.
Speaking that, I was trying to picture what your symbol would be, and
we can't talk about that on the radio.
Very phallic.
My tramp stamp is my bear paw on my neck.
Oh, well, there you go.
So there we go. That's my symbol. So if I take my name away, then we'll just do that.
Dude.
Perfect.
Yeah. I think it's interesting that you mentioned that because you're right. It's important for folks to be able to identify with things. And there are obviously some folks who can't identify with, like, they don't fit nicely into a box. And I think being comfortable with that is important as well.
Yeah.
I think that's absolutely...
Well, here's the thing about labels and identities and identifying with things. If you couldn't identify a toilet from your kitchen sink, we'd have an issue.
True.
Mind you, I have been that drunk. So
okay, well, I was going to say I have been too, but I wasn't going to say it until you said
it. You were at Luke's place on Saturday?
Yeah. It's all about... Well, you mentioned that you're going out east and cutting together a newer album, which is a bit more upbeat. And I think it's important that we kind of tie into the genre as a whole. And I really do believe that I think that country music is starting to move into a less homophobic space. It's at least in the impression I get from the States, that country music is almost the bastion of conservative culture, where it makes me think of who's the guy with the really long beard and they have the duck called Duck Dynasty guy.
Oh yeah.
That's what makes me think of when I think of, like,
you know what I find hilarious about country music though, and even talking about sort of the progression of sort of being more open to gay stuff. But when you look at old country and you look at old country artists, like straight male country artists,
I know where you're going with
they're that. Some of the gayest guys ever seen in your whole life.
I've never talking worn that, more than that much glitter in my life.
Yeah, like embroidered tops and big domes and
so
like
jealous.
Jewelry up the yin yang and huge 80s hair. And like,
I'm jealous.
I'm jealous. Very pretty.
Yeah, the Rhinestone Cowboy boy. I'm going to do it someday, I'll tell you.
Yeah. In heels.
Oh, I don't know. I got big feet.
Yeah, but they're pretty.
I would worry about falling over.
Yeah.
The song I actually have lined up is a very new song from Brandi Clark. It came out on January 21st. I'm playing this because it's not a hit, and we dodged the hit rule, which is always important. But the reason why is Brandi Clark also co-wrote the song Follow Your Arrow, which was... kind of, you mentioned like the Georgia, Florida. Is Georgia, Florida?
Line.
Yeah. Kind of style of music and kind of the poppy country crossover that's happening right now. And Follow Your Arrow really spoke to that and was very much a song about just like whatever goes, but targeting to the younger, the youth demographic of country listeners.
Yeah.
And Brandi Clark is openly lesbian and co-wrote that particular song, performed by somebody I forget the name of. But yeah, so this is her song, Girl Next Door, and we'll be back in just a few minutes, just after this.
When you took me home, you knew who you were taking. Some Debbie debutante standing in an apron, frying up your bacon. My house. my mouth and my mind get kind of trashy. I've never been to jail, but hell, I wouldn't put it past me.
Hello and welcome back to Vavo Studio, home of Ottawa's Queen Media. And shout out to St. John, New Brunswick as well, actually, where we'll be playing as well. Broadcast. Yes, and so that I actually really enjoyed that song. Mm-hmm. It was very upbeat. I like the whole ethos of if you want like this archetypical girl next door, then, you know, sawed off next door and
call me.
Call Angus.
Give me a show.
That's true.
I'm a little extra beardy, but whatever works.
There's a little bristle, eh?
Yeah.
Just close your eyes.
I can be the girl next door.
She didn't shave her legs.
Or anything else. Or anything for that else. No. Or her back.
No.
Her shoulders.
No.
Yeah. That's not important.
That's not the visual I was offering.
Yeah. Put that in. Jesus. Welcome, New Brunswick.
This song has now been ruined for all of our listeners who are going to visualize
me, but, you know, this mug.
About that song, I will say that it's easier to be a lesbian.
In the country music industry?
Yeah, in general, because, you know, if you think about, I'm nothing against lesbians. I love them. I have lots of friends that are lesbian. But the thing is that, because like a lot of lesbians are big fans of mine. And but the thing is, if you're a lesbian, it's much more marketable because lesbianism has been shown in how many movies before, and it's mm-hmm. very acceptable. And what do straight guys watch?
But it's been very much exploited as well. I think it's worth demonstrating that identity has been pimped out almost to sell things.
And only a certain version of lesbianism, like not nothing that's really actually quite real in everyday.
Yeah,
like,
no,
it's sort of this sort of very heterosexual ideal of what lesbianism is. But
so I just wanted to say that it's, you know, I don't think she's, like, obviously, because I've heard of her, and but I haven't really heard of her. And I think that she's probably been overlooked, and that's the reason why, because that Nashville just pushes that out of the limelight. They don't want that in the limelight. So it kind of gets buried.
Now, you mentioned that you're going to take another crack at the whip with the radio industry. So when are we hoping to hear you on the radio?
August 15th will be the release of it.
So around then?
Yeah.
Just in time for, that's Pride season, I believe.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, Pride season starts in April and runs till October.
Yes. it's a really great song that was written by a songwriter in Austin, Texas that I found. And it's the name of the song is Wherever Love Takes Us. And that's basically the foundation of the next probably 5 years of my career, of wherever the love is going to take me. Because it's a lot of people have loved it and loved it enough to keep me going. So this song is for them. So,
perfect.
Are we going to be seeing you perform at any of the Pride festivals?
That's an interesting question. They had emailed us last year, Capital Pride, and we said yes, of course. I've been looking forward to playing Pride for the past 5 years. You will see me at Thunder Bay Pride. I am headlining Thunder Bay Pride. They have kindly asked us to be their special guest this year. So we'll be at Thunder Bay Pride for sure.
Thunder Bay has a great Pride festival.
And they love country music.
Yeah.
Like, they love big, hairy rednecks like me.
Yeah, Thunder Bay gets it.
It's
they know
awesome.
It. Yeah.
So, and you know, and I really would love to do Capital Pride. I wanted to do Capital Pride when my first album came out. So I've been wanting to do it for a while. You know, the only people that have been incredibly inclusive with me in the Ottawa gay community have been the Gay Men's Chorus.
Mm-hmm.
And a big shout out to the Gay Men's Chorus. Incredible, incredible pile of talent. Incredible bunch of guys. And they've been nothing but welcoming. They've always had a special guesting at their cabarets and exposed me as much as they could.
Yeah, we've had a great time with them.
Yeah. We like the exposure.
They like exposing men.
Exposing, yeah. But so a big shout out to the Ottawa Gay Men's Chorus, because I love working with those guys.
And I have an interesting question. A lot of the major Pride festivals are based in big urban centres.
Yeah.
That's where the vast majority of the large ones are. You know, how does, you know, the fact that the Prides are in these urban centres compare to the country genre, which is more of a rural music genre? Like, do you get much traction in urban centres?
Leave it to me to be the most awkward musician ever, right? I think I automatically pick something that would be difficult, because it is difficult to fit into that demographic. Because that's why I say that my fans are my fans and they're diehards, but I don't think my fans are at Pride. Mm-hmm. I think because a lot of guys my age are not at Pride.
Mm.
And there's a reason for that, and I could do another radio show completely just talking about the demographic of the over 40 disposable. You're no longer useful to the gay community. You know, I know I don't want to go down a bitter road with this, but it's very, very real in our community that men over 40 are no longer valid. And I am here, and I am going to keep going, and I'm never going to stop to prove that we are valid and we do have a place. And wherever that place is, we're going to find it. I think it's happening already, you know.
Now I'm nervous because I turned 40 this month.
Well, you will join us.
It's all doom and gloom now.
Yeah, this show is your swan song. I don't know if you knew that.
Yeah,
that
was, the last hurrah, last kick at the can.
This is it. This is it. You get.
I have a good 2 weeks and then I'm screwed.
That's it. All. Over 40, game over. Yeah. It used to be that you were dead over 30 in the gay community, that you hit 30, game over. And I think that.
Okay, I'm just making it closer so I'll feel better.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's approaching 50.
But,
hey.
My point is that we really need to tackle ageism in the gay community. But before we tackle ageism in the gay community, why don't we talk about the next song that you're going to play?
Okay, so this song is really funny. This was a song where everybody said, okay, enough Drake, enough of the draggy, depressing, heavy music. We need to write something that's very, very upbeat. I wrote the song with Tia McGrath, who's an amazing Americana folk artist from Port Dover, Ontario, and her husband, Tommy Parham. And we were sitting in a cabin in Calabogie, and we were talking about how my husband and I met on Bear 411, and 3 months later, we were married. And we've, you know, Michael and I have been together for, it's been an amazing ride with Michael. I love him so much. But it's been 8 years for Michael and I now. And I wanted to write a song about, you know, how I came with my U-Haul from Moncton, New Brunswick, with my clothes and, you know, my Easy Bake Oven collection, which is, and moved in with my husband and married him a few months later. And that's what, so this fun song is all, it's called Fast Enough for Me. And it's all about, it was a complete indulgence about Mike and I.
Did you have the Barbie camper then too? Or
I didn't have
later?
Jonathan, you had to bring up the Barbie camper. I will deny the Barbie camper.
Well, this is the last song for us. So we're going to say goodbye because David Dale's show is coming up right after this. And if you want to play us out.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you for
coming.
Thanks,
Luke. Thanks, Angus.
Looking forward.
These days love comes quick, find a date but just stay click. All it takes is dinner for two, then they're moving in with you. I was raised on country things, slow walks and front porch swings. I got someone who likes my pace and that's fast enough for me. Everybody's trying to get her done and I'm just here lying in the sun. A long slow kiss on a sandy beach and that's fast enough, a sunset driving my old Jeep, my baby's hand upon my knee, and I don't know what you might like, but that's fast enough for me. I tried to tame a corporate beast, don't interest me the least. I got a seed and a row to hoe and a little love is gonna make it grow. Got enough to get me by, like the taste of humble pie. I got a job at Joe's Garage and that's fast enough for me. Everybody's trying to get her done and I'm just here lying in the sun. A long slow kiss on a sandy beach and that's fast enough, sunset driving my old Jeep, my baby's hand upon my knee, and I don't know what you might like, but that's fast enough for me. I was raised on country things, like slow walks, front porch swings, and a George Strait song on my radio, and that's fast enough for me. Everybody's trying to get her done, and I'm just here lying in the sun. A long slow kiss on a sandy beach, and that's fast enough, a sunset driving my old Jeep. My baby's hand upon my knee, and I don't know what you might like, but that's fast enough for me.